gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, September, what is today? The 3rd, right? Hang on just a second.
You did this last night.
Yeah, I know. We got all sorts of audio bleed through. There we go. What is today?
Wednesday, September 2nd.
I knew that. Just checking to make sure you're on board. Folks, this is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, September, what he said, 2015, and we're coming to you live from the studios of the Hagman and Hagman Report, the radio and television studios of the Hagman and Hagman Report, located in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Well, at our new time, of course, and it shouldn't be new to everyone. Actually, we've been doing this for now a couple of weeks, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And ladies and gentlemen, we're proud to be on the broadcast by the Global Star Radio Network and featured live and in high-definition video on YouTube. That's right, YouTube Live on the official Hagman and Hagman YouTube channel. Folks, all you have to do is go to HagmanandHagman.com, and it should be right there. Click on the either click on the link directly to our YouTube channel, or it's embedded in tonight's episode. It's right there. And you can listen live. Links to listen live via the Global Star Radio Network are located on our website, HagmanandHagman.com. And the link to watch us in high def is at the same location, HagmanandHagman.com. Have you got any idea that HagmanandHagman.com is our home base on the Internet? Of course it is. And for those who don't know, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report. Proud to be together. Proud to be representing the truth in times of this in perilous times. And it's our job to bring you the news that propels the headlines, and the headlines we have, so many of them. We do the headline and news trio so you don't have to, and bring guests on who really are at the cutting edge of the information spectrum. We want to thank all the new listeners. Thank you so much for your feedback on our new studio digs. Hope you like it. We have made some additions to the keen eyes. Perhaps you can see our new additions, right, in the studio. And I did bring my studio dog today. So, folks, if you hear a little clank of chain, and she might even jump up on my lap, making an intro or an unexpected visit here. She's in the office right now, but sleeping on the couch, soundly on the couch. At any rate, folks, I want to thank you again and let you know our home base is HagmanandHagman.com. From there, you can reach us all of our live and archive programs. Folks, don't forget, and we haven't talked about this very much. Joe, you and I have not talked about this. The weekend of the 13th and 14th, we're going to be in Ohio somewhere, Norwalk, Ohio, with Russ Dizdar, L.A. Marzulli, Gary Stearman, and others, taking part in the final Nephilim 3 Nephilim Mounds Conference. We're going to be putting some information up on our website on that. Not tonight. Joe, I'm going to, before we get too far into this, I just want to say this. Tonight, we've got a really special guest. His name is Jerry Robinson. He is the author of this book, which, if you're watching this live, it's this book right here, right in front of me. It's a great book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation. Jerry hosts his own radio show, and his website is over my left shoulder on the monitor there. It's ftmdaily.com is his website. It's linked off of HagmanandHagman.com. But, Joe, we interviewed him in Florida, man. He did a great job. He's so informational.
Yeah, we met at the Prophecy in the News Conference in Orlando, Florida, and we did a little roundtable with Jerry and Paul McGuire, and he's been on the show before. And tonight we're going to talk about a number of things. We're going to get into the stock market, what's going on in the Asian markets. We're going to talk about the Shemitah and some of the things to look for out here in September. With that, we're going to bring...
I want to answer one thing. I'm sorry. I noticed in the interactive area of YouTube, people are saying, well, the program starts at 7:05. It does. It's 7 o'clock. Between 7 and 7:05 is the news segment for the network. Okay, that's the way it is. And at 7:05 or 7:05 and some odd seconds, we come on. So you just adjust your, but of course, listen to the headline news at the top of the hour, to Global Star Network headline news, important stuff. And we talk about the very issues that they broadcast as well. But anyway, perhaps the most important question, Joe, today, people who are members of our audience are saying, hey, September's coming. And on the 9th, we have Jonathan Kahn, who's going to be appearing with us tonight on the 9th of September. He's going to be talking about the Shemitah and the things that might may or may not happen here in September, but just the whole economic aspect of things. But with that, Jerry Robinson, fantastic. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, let's bring Jerry on.
Yeah.
Jerry, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's been a while since we've had you back on, and glad to have you on tonight.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and let's get right into it. Dropped your book here. Bankruptcy of Our Nation. It's called Your Financial Survival Guide, 21 Income Streams, Inflation-Proof Strategies, and More. Jerry, we talked last week while booking this show, and you said something that I was thinking about. You said, you know, when the stock market was real volatile there for a couple of days, you said not everybody was losing money. That people were making money off the volatility in the downturns or corrections, whatever people want to call it, in the stock market. I guess, first of all, what would you call it? Would you call it a correction, or is this just volatility due to the huge amount of increases we've seen the stock market gain over the last few years?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it, just a brief sell-off. I believe that we are definitely experiencing a correction. We're in correction territory in some ways. Although the NASDAQ did bounce out of that today. But yeah, I mean, there is a tremendous ability for the average individual out there to profit from a down market. I've been trading stocks stocks, ETFs, options, currencies, commodities for the last 17 years. And the majority of my money comes when we have moments just like this. And this is the most lucrative time for a trader if they know how to trade these markets. In fact, over at our website, we host a Tuesday and a Friday market conference call while the markets are open. And back in June, we told our subscribers to get into volatility. We told them we were getting into volatility. We bought call options on volatility. And if you've seen in the news lately, of course, you just referred to volatility, but you can actually buy volatility. You can buy the volatility index, and you can buy options on the volatility index. And, of course, since we purchased those, that option has gone up over 600-700%. Now, that is just the beginning of what we think we're getting ready to see. So that's obviously been a phenomenal return. But those are the kinds of returns that exist in these kinds of markets. There's great opportunity. And I know that so many people like to focus upon, you know, it's going to be bad, it's going to be bloody. But when I look at these kinds of markets, all I see is dollar signs. When the market goes down, you can make money just like when the market goes up. So there's really nothing to be fearful of here unless you're locked in a buy and hold mentality and you're planning on holding stocks for the long term, then things are probably going to get pretty bloody for you if this downturn continues.
What would you advise people who have and are in the stock market, whether directly, you know, trading stocks, to those who have retirement plans, 401ks, in stock markets? What advice would you give to them for the volatility period we're seeing now? Should they hold it out? Is there one thing they should, do more than others?
Well, the average person out there who has a 401k or an IRA, that's typically where they have their money in stocks. Most people don't know, at least the people I've talked to before, in the past when I've done coaching and whatnot, most people don't realize that they don't have to sit through a market correction. Instead, they feel hopeless. They see all of these fearful predictions and they throw their hands in the air and say, I guess I'll just pray. Well, that's very important. Prayer has its place, but there is a point for action as well. Faith without works is dead. And so we need to take action. If we see something coming, then why don't we take action? And so what people can do if they have money in a 401k or an IRA is they can simply move that money to cash. Now, obviously, I'm not a financial advisor, so they want to talk to a trusted financial advisor. But you can actually take the money that you have in stocks, if it's like in a retirement account, and you can move that to cash. And if it's a tax-deductible type of situation, you know, it's a IRA, a traditional, or a Roth, or a 401k, traditionally speaking, you can move that money to cash, wait out this tumult, and then redeploy the capital whenever market conditions are more favorable. Many people don't know that. Many people sat through the 2008 crash, just said, threw their hands in the air and said, well, I guess, you know, I'm just going to have to deal with this loss. But you certainly don't have to. You can definitely step to the sidelines with your 401k or IRA.
Jerry, if I can ask this, I'd like to take a couple of steps back here. Now, you and I spoke, and you and I and Joe spoke in Orlando, and you gave a wonderful presentation. And I remember our conversation, and much of our conversation had to do with the future this year, the economy this year, what people could expect. And by the way, folks, if you go to ftmdaily.com, which is Jerry's website, you can listen to, and this is a wonderful, he's got a great YouTube channel as well, but you can listen to his broadcast over the last couple of weeks, but also the financial building seminar that you did, and that's coming up again, I believe. But that aside for a moment, let's take a few steps back. What do you see, and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you see coming here in the near term, or even if it doesn't happen in September? Just tell me what you see coming with regards to the economy.
Yeah, we see a 40 to 60% drop in the overall stock market. Back in 2008, we wrote a book called Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And the book basically stated that the market was going to implode. Of course, I wrote, you know, it came out in 2008, so we wrote it in 2007. And it came out. We were out storming all over stages and churches across the country, telling people to get prepared. Here it comes. The market really imploded by the time we got to the fall of 2008. It was really bloody. And then the market bottomed out in March of 2009. We have a trend following system that we use, and our trend system said to get back in August of 2009. So since August of 2009 until just recently, we have been in the market earning, you know, well, we've earned, you know, practically, I guess, 200% in gains just from the rise from August to the point just recently, when our system gave us a red alert. And so we sent out an email to all of our subscribers letting them know, red alert, market is turning down. Because market's all moving one of three ways. It doesn't matter if it's gold, silver, oil, stocks, whatever the case might be, bonds. They move up, down, or sideways. And so when you look at a chart and you do chart analysis, you're able to see when those things happen. You go back to 1929, you can look at a chart, you can see that collapse on the chart, you can actually see where a perfect time to get out would have been. In 2008, it's the same. 1973, it's the same. 1937, it's the same. I mean, all of these charts look the same whenever they begin to top. And when we take a look at the current chart now, it doesn't look like your traditional top on a stock market chart. It doesn't look that traditional. It looks a little odd, to be honest. And typically, you get a real nice final gasp up right before the market really begins to implode. We got that back in October. So we really haven't had this massive spike that typically precedes a massive pullback in the overall market. So I'm a little bit weirded out by what I've seen so far, but at the same time, we believe that the path of least resistance is down. Think about the catalyst for this market. I mean, there really is none. The Federal Reserve has pumped in tremendous amounts of money, and that has been to no avail, except for the stock market. The real economy really has done no good from all that QE. In fact, Stephen Williamson from the Federal Reserve of St. Louis made that same comment, put out a white paper about 2 weeks ago basically stating that the goals of QE did not meet the mark. They did not spur on the real economy. So the Fed themselves admitting that QE, the money printing campaigns they've had for many years, have not met their goals. They didn't even really create any kind of real economic boom. They just simply inflated asset prices. And so what we have now is a tremendous bubble, and we believe that there really is no catalyst to the upside. Could the QE, could the Fed come out and say they're going to do QE4? Sure. Could China come out? Could Beijing come out and have some sort of massive stimulus plan that's just becoming unveiled and cause the global fears to subside? Sure. And that might give us, that might stave this off for a little longer. But barring any of that, we see the path of least resistance as down, and we are preparing for that. So we're taking positions. In fact, we've been taking positions now for some time. We've been out of the market long term for many months. We've simply been speculating. And now, you know, of course, we're making money as the market goes down. And let's say this to the believers that are out there who believe that the market is going to implode in September because of the Shemitah or because of some other reason in September. You know, it's really kind of like having the winning numbers to a lottery ticket. You know, if you know when the market's going to collapse, or you think that you know, then that would seem like a perfect opportunity to bless the kingdom of God, right? But right now, the way that it stands, the banksters are going to make money off of this. The speculative traders, they're going to make money off of a market implosion. But the average hardworking people out there who think that they know when the market is going to collapse are going to run for the hills while the banksters make all the money. So I think it's a little bit bizarre that many in the Christian community feel as if they think that they have been given this knowledge that the market's going to collapse. But to this date, I haven't seen any kind of strategic action or strategic ideas put out about how to actually use it for the benefit of the kingdom. But we do think it's going down.
I know I asked you this in Orlando, but when you say it's going down, and folks, we're talking, our very special guest tonight is Mr. Jerry Robinson, the author of Bankruptcy of Our Nation. Of course, his website, linked off of HagmanandHagman.com, is FTMDaily.com. That's Follow the Money Daily, shortened to FTMDaily.com, and he does a weekly radio show, which is fantastic. Boy, that's program prep for me during the weekends. But what's this going to look like? I remember, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Jerry, Monday, we woke up to this here in the West, or those people who woke up early, you know, knew what was coming. We woke up to this dramatic moment in stock market history. And I think you referenced it on your, I know you referenced it on your program, but are we going to wake up like on a Monday or a Tuesday and all of a sudden things are going to be exponentially worse than that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, you mentioned I don't have a crystal ball. I have a windsock, right? I mean, so I'm able to see which direction the market is going. I'm able to see which way the wind is blowing. But I don't know that. Yeah, sure. I mean, it could be a Monday morning. We wake up, market's imploding. We've had a couple of those. We had that, you know, this week, Monday was pretty bad. Last week, I woke up and was staring at the markets and saw that the Dow Jones was down, you know, 1,100 points just in the first 30 minutes of trading. So that was a very, you know, spooky moment, seeing something like that. We don't realize that our entire economy has been built upon debt. We don't realize that the money we actually use today is actually debt-based. It's fiat. It's printed out of thin air. And so there seems to be, let me go back to this idea of the Shemitah, because I know that that's a very popular thing that's going around right now. And the idea that I've been able to gather from the Shemitah, and I know, you know, I've talked to Jonathan Kahn. I mean, I'm aware of what he promotes. And as an economist, I look at this and I'm a bit perplexed, because it seems as if the concept here regarding the market is that it's going to implode because America's a sinful nation. And it seems as if a lot of that sin has been accelerated by the recent same-sex marriage case that occurred just recently with the Supreme Court. And so it seems as if what the argument is that our economy is going to implode because there are sinners in the country and our nation has turned its back on God. Well, I can see that to a certain extent. However, when you take a look at the actual money system itself, it itself is an abomination. This is one of the things that we try to get across to believers whenever we do conferences and seminars, is the fact that if you believe that this current market has been blessed because the market is going up and because we have lots of money being pumped into the system, and this has been going on since day one. It's not like it's something new that happened when Obama came into office. This has been going on for a long time. And so we have a debt-based economy, and the concept is that somehow if we pray that we can make this go away, that the economy won't crash, and that we can all live happily ever after. Well, you know, we have a way of saying it this way, that you could technically put prayer back in school. You could end abortions. You could have abortion overturned. You could have national revival. You could end same-sex marriage. You could put the Ten Commandments in the Oval Office. You could get rid of every other kind of sin that you don't like and have everybody praying. And guess what? Your economy still implodes. Why? Because it's based on debt. You can't violate economic laws and get away with it. It's because you pray. I mean, if you throw an apple in the air, it's going to come down. That's a physical law. If you violate a monetary law that was set forth in the Old Testament, it's going to blow up in your face. Doesn't matter if you don't want it to. You can't jump off a building and say, "Lord, don't let me hit the ground." You violated a law. You're going to pay. And so when you violate monetary laws, you get to pay the price for it. And so there seems to be this kind of idea that if enough Christians will pray away this mess, that somehow the dollar will no longer be backed up by debt, or that no longer it'll be fiat, or somehow the Federal Reserve won't be the Federal Reserve, you know, by praying. It's not the case. Not saying we shouldn't pray. Of course we should. But it seems very misguided. In this discussion of the Shemitah, there seems to be a tremendous emphasis upon gay people, a tremendous emphasis upon sinners who, by the way, commit sins that are not necessarily committed inside the church. When I think of church sins, I think of gluttony. I think of adultery. I think of a lot of hidden sins. And those are the sins that we don't want to talk about. We don't want to talk about those kinds of sins. We don't want to talk about the monetary sins that we've committed. Instead, the church seems fixated upon talking about and focusing upon the sins that are occurring outside its four walls. And that's very convenient, because if you can blame this economic implosion upon those outsiders or those sinners outside our walls, then it makes us feel better. But in reality, I believe we have grossly misdiagnosed the problem. The problem is that we as a nation have ignored the basic monetary laws as that are found in the Bible. And again, you can get rid of all of these external sins, but until you deal with that root, you're only hacking at the branches.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, what you just said there, talking about the focus of the, especially the leadership of the church. And yesterday we had a chance to talk briefly about this. The Pope came out and issued a directive, I guess, a church directive, internal, directed towards the bishops and the priests, saying, you know, during this next Jubilee year, and I believe the dates were December 8th, 2015 to November 20th, 2016, they said in the article that the Pope was saying, now granting the authority to forgive sins of abortion and such. And you're right, you know, what you said about, you know, all these people can turn to the Lord, all these people can, you know, become spiritual and get saved through Jesus. But, you know, the current monetary and political system we have right now, and I'm adding the political, you talked about the monetary, it's unsustainable and is corrupt, it is fixed, and it has been evil since its inception, with the design to bankrupt and turn us into a debt-based society. And, you know, I guess if we can talk about this a little bit, the economic vultures that, you know, it's one thing to make money off a market if you know what you're doing, but it's another thing to take advantage of people. When you see, you know, these huge swings in the market, you know, in the, whether it's the stock market, the real estate market, any of these bubbles we have, and you, when you see people grabbing up, you know, assets with for pennies on the dollar, basically laying in wait for these situations to happen, we're going to have, you know, big problems. What would you suggest as a Christian? How to, how would you approach this problem of the fiat currency? Would it be just stocking up on supplies and preparation like food and helping other people, gold and silver, simple things? Or do you have any kind of plan for a way Christians can try to get out of this as unscathed as possible?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a thing on our website. It's called the 5 Levels of Financial Freedom. It's the same thing that my wife and I did to break financially free. They can go to our website, ftmdaily.com/5levels. You can type in the number or the word. Or you can just go to our website and click the Get Started button right there at the top menu. And it takes you through our 5 levels. It just kind of walks you right through. It's completely free. There's no registration. You know, you just go right through and you're able to get lots of great information about how to get started preparing for what we see lying ahead. But let's go back to that idea of a fiat debt-based paper currency system. Why is it so bad? Well, go back to the 1791 Currency Act that was passed and signed by George Washington. The 1791 Currency Act basically states that if any future person or any future institution in the United States were to print paper money, that the penalty for that should be death, because these founding fathers knew the power of fiat money. They knew the power of the monetary system. And so they stated in the Constitution, Section 1, Article 1, Section 8, that all money must be based on gold or silver. And the Congress itself would have the right to and the obligation to coin that money. And so what happened in 1913, and of course it was a struggle from the very beginning, because we had the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States, and then we had a flirtation with some other kinds of central banking. But then in 1913, they finally introduced the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve implemented this. And our paper monetary system now is very similar to what the Bible describes as an unjust weight and a false balance. If you read in Leviticus 19, I believe it's verses 35 and 36, or you read in Proverbs 11:1 or Proverbs 20, verses 10, I think, and 23, somewhere in there, you will read that God calls an unjust weight and a false balance an abomination. He calls it an abomination. And what this means and how this applies to us is we think about, what does that mean, an unjust weight, a false balance? Well, back in these times, you know, the Jews did not really have a monetary system like we think of it today. They really relied a lot on barter. Now, they had a shekel, obviously, but they really did not have the kind of sophisticated monetary system that we have today. That really got introduced with the Hellenization, with Greece. They really brought in the idea of money into the Jewish culture. But prior to that, there was a lot of barter, and typically people would trade, and they would use scales. And an unscrupulous merchant could tip the balance on his scales in his favor. And so he could do that by maybe, you know, just adjusting it slightly. So whenever you put, you know, your stuff onto the scale, it weighed a little more. And so you owed a little more, even though you didn't really have that much. That was an unjust weight. That was a false balance. And God says, that's an absolute abomination to me. He literally calls it an abomination. Same thing he says about homosexuality, right? It's the same exact thing. He hates it. And so what we have done today, and this is one of the reasons why George Washington had this Currency Act passed in 1791, he knew, and it was obvious wisdom from previous experience and from future fears, that we would end up in the situation we are today, where we have a currency that is printed out of thin air, it has absolutely no backing, and it is an unjust weight and a false balance. It can be manipulated. You hear people talk about our economy is manipulated, the data is manipulated, our economic data is manipulated, our currency is manipulated, the stock market is manipulated. Friends, that is an abomination according to the Bible. So that itself is going to be judged. Now, you have people out there, as I mentioned before, who want to hitch their own culture war issues to this, and they muddle the waters. Because what they want to say is, well, the economy is going to crash because of the gays. We just talked about that. Or the economy is going to crash because of Obama. Or the economy is going to crash because of some, you know, some X factor. Just fill in your favorite sin. Fill in your favorite idea. And that's what people have done, and therefore they have totally muddied the waters to where we can't really see that we are all guilty of this. We are all living in a system that is called an abomination to God. So now, what do we not participate in it? Well, we have to participate in it. I mean, we can't go out to the hills and not participate in it. But you've asked a very penetrating question in the fact that what do you do? I mean, how do you prepare for what's ahead? And so we say that this entire system is an abomination to God. The paper money is abomination to God. And by the way, in 1971, whenever Nixon took us off of the gold standard, he imposed this abomination upon the entire world, because at that moment the entire world became basically a fiat monetary system, and thus, according to the Bible, a complete abomination. So we're living with a monetary system that is completely jacked up. It's very bad. It's very negative, according to the Bible. And we should also note that the Bible has a lot to say about money. Larry Burkett, God rest his soul, had made the comment that the Bible talks about money over 2,350 times. 2,350 verses about money, wealth, and possessions. Why? Why would God be so interested in money? Well, the reason is, we believe, is that because he knows that money is the chief god of this world. He knows that it is, if there is one thing that competes with our hearts, it is money. I would venture to say that the majority of your audience worships money, whether they know it or not. I know I battle it. You guys probably battle it. Sure. It's something that we all face. It's a very, very tough sin, and it's one thing we don't want to think about. We don't want to talk about it. We know that it's there. We know that we, in many ways, are enslaved to money. We're enslaved to a paycheck. We're enslaved to this system. We're enslaved to credit card debt. We're enslaved to student loan debt, whatever the case might be. But the fact is that it is a system that is obviously causing a lot of unseen problems, and it doesn't get pointed out nearly enough. I guess the point of my discussion here is to really let that emerge out and let that stand alone. Let it be the sin that it is. Let it be seen and exposed for what it is, because money really is the root and chief competitor of our heart for God. He knows that. That's why he puts all those verses in the Bible. He wants to protect us from this. And here you have it. Many people believe we're in the last days. And what better thing to do than to have a global, abominable monetary system that completely defies what God has called for? And so we have to understand that at its root. We can't muddy the waters and try to pile other sins on it and hide it. We have to let it be seen for what it is. We can see those other sins. They need to be dealt with also. But let's not cover this one up with our favorite culture war topics so that it gets buried and we can't address the root cause.
All right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, and I do believe I am, what you're saying is right now our monetary system as it stands and as it was developed over the last really 100 years plus is based on unjust measures. Sinfulness. I mean, the monetary system itself, the structure, it's sinful by its very nature. It's inherently sinful. It's inherently, I mean, it's right up there.
Yeah, and take it to the next level. And I know we talked about this on the show this week, and I believe last week, the wars that have been started just as of late with different countries trying to step away from the U.S. dollar.
Right.
And the, Jerry, I'm sure you're familiar with the countries that were without a central bank before 2001. And how that has changed, and what they have done, obviously overthrowing nations and dictators who try to step away from this currency backed by the petrodollar. Do you, in the future, do you see, I believe that we're going to be moved to a digital-based monetary system. I do believe that the RFID chip will be ushered in, and they'll try to do that with everyone. But what is your take on the future of our economy? Does it have to crash and burn? Can it be moved to another type of system with minimal damage, minimal collateral damage?
This brings up a really interesting topic, because back in 2006, we wrote a pretty lengthy article called Preparing for the Collapse of the Petrodollar System. It's on our website, ftmdaily.com/petrodollar. It's received probably, I don't know, 20 million views. It's one of these articles. You know how you have your website and you have some, you know, great articles out there, but one just kind of strikes a chord with everybody. This is the one article that everybody seems to find on our website, and it resonates with them. It's a four-part series on the collapse of the petrodollar system, and we lay out the entire history of this. This has been on our website now for 10 years. And in different forms. It used to be on another website. We finally have it on this new website here, ftmdaily.com/petrodollar. And you can read the whole four-part series. You can download the PDF. It's completely free. But, yes, the petrodollar system is a major, major problem. But we have to go back a little further with the petrodollar system, because it's not just that simple. It's not just that they don't have central banks. It's not just that the petrodollar system itself is, propping up our system. What's even more insidious about the petrodollar system is how it, the partners that we have. Think about this. When you take a look at the Bible and you read about what God says the promised land is, you begin to realize that it is an area that is much larger than what we see today. So if we take a look at Genesis chapter 15, verses 18 through 21, or if we look at Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, we see this area that God promises to Abram, promises, an everlasting promise. And he says that I'm going to give you the land from the great river all the way out to the river Euphrates, from the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates. That's a huge area, right? I mean, that's a very big area. That covers many, many different parts of the Middle East. And then, of course, he says it will go from north to south, a very long distance as well. So you can read the borders that he describes there. Well, over time, we have seen that Israel now inhabits a very small region. Now, God's promise, did God change his mind? Does God not want them to have that land? Well, we don't know why they don't have it right now. I guess we could say they just didn't conquer it, or whatever the case might be. We don't know. But what we do know is that God doesn't change his mind. He wanted them to have a land that is much larger than what they currently occupy now. Now, how did they end up where they are right now? Well, in 1947, 1948, we have to go back further than that, but back to the Sykes-Picot Treaty. We all, you know, some of us know about that. If you're familiar with Israeli history, the Sykes-Picot Treaty in post-World War I, and then, of course, in post-World War II, we have this move to where Israel and the Jews are brought back into the land. And the rest of the land, this promised land, that encompasses much of Saudi Arabia, much of Iraq, all of Jordan, much of Syria, parts of Egypt, you know, this area called Greater Israel, that part's given to who? It's given to Israel's sworn enemies, the Muslims. So the West, goes to war with the Ottoman Empire. They divide the land for gain, and they give 10% of the promised land to Israel. And they want to be patted on the back because the West helped Israel, and we stand for Israel. But the rest of the land is given to Israel's sworn enemies. And then what happens from that point on? Well, over time, in the 1940s, FDR begins brokering deals with Saudi Arabia to be able to get the oil that's underneath the ground of the promised land in Saudi Arabia. This is an area which, if you map it out, we have a map of it on our website that you can see, this Greater Israel area. We are still doing the calculations, but the majority of the Middle East oil sits underneath the boundaries that God mentions in Genesis chapter 15 and Deuteronomy chapter 1. So he places all of this wealth underneath this area and says, this is my land. This is the apple. You know, this is my land. This is my promised land that I'm giving to you, Abram. And not to all of your descendants, but he clearly states in the Bible that it is to you and then to the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, going down that lineage. That's who the land is for. So, what does the U.S. do with the petrodollar system? They broker deals with all of Israel's sworn enemies. They go over there, they broker deals, and they say, look, we'll help you pull oil out of the ground, you price it in dollars, and we'll sell it together. So who's profiting from the oil underneath the promised land? Me and you, and Israel's sworn enemies. So that means that the wealth that we have today is what? It is blood money, coming from the oil underneath the ground of the Promised Land. Our wealth that we constantly hear people say we are greatly blessed here in America, we have all this blessing, because we have new cars, we have this big economy. Well, how do we get this big economy? Where did it come from? How do we get here? Well, we got here from the fact that we divided the land for gain. The West divided the land for gain. And America and its regional cohorts in the Middle East suck oil out of the ground of greater Israel and trade it for fake paper money. So I get a kick out of hearing people claim that America is going to turn its back on Israel someday. They're so fearful that Obama one day might turn his back and betray Israel, when in fact, we, all of us, our wealth, our literally the clothes on our back, come from raping the Promised Land and sucking the oil out and then forcing it to be charged in our currency and then being enriched by it and through it.
Back to that unjust balances and weights. Yeah.
Exactly. And folks, moving backward just a little bit, if you go to our live on-air YouTube stream, or if you're watching this live as well, behind us and on live on the YouTube screen is Mr. Robinson's preparing for the collapse of the petrodollar. Very interesting. And it's got rave reviews by G. Everett Griffin. And let me quote this in his book, Bankrupt.
The website is ftmdaily.com.
Yes, I'm sorry.
ftmdaily.com.
Right. And preparing for the collapse of the petrodollar system. Going back to what he said earlier, in a very extensive or four-part article series can be downloaded in PDF as well. He's got... it's just an extremely important article in order to understand the petrodollar. I didn't mean to take you off topic there, Jerry, but I just wanted to point that out. And of course, Jerry Robinson is the author of Bankruptcy of Our Nation, a book I just picked up on Monday in preparation of the night again for the second time, reading it for the second time. And it's just it's just fantastic. So go ahead.
It is great, and I would urge everybody to... Excuse me. I would urge everybody to grab a copy, if they can. Do you have this available on ebook by any chance, Jerry? You there, Jerry?
Did we lose you, buddy?
Well, if we did lose him, we will get him reconnected. Could be a. I know he's connected through Skype. Could be a bad Skype connection, and we'll get him back on. But no, his website is ftmdaily.com.
Yep, you back?
I'm here.
All right.
I don't even remember what I asked. But yeah, ftmdaily.com, Bankruptcy of Our Nation is his book.
Yeah.
We got about 12 minutes left before the break, Jerry. I don't know where you want to go from here. I know we wanted to get into what is happening in the Asian stock market. Does that give you enough time to cover that, or do you want to wait till the top of the next hour? Signal must be in and out.
Yeah, Jerry, if you're talking, we can't hear you, brother.
And the video does look good. Go to HagmanandHagman.com for those listening live if
right.
you want to watch us while we try to get Jerry back on.
Right. And behind
just
us.
Just giving us a cue, trying to get him back, lost him again.
Yeah.
Must be some kind of internet Skype connection.
For those people watching us live on the monitor behind us, of course, is Jerry's website. And on Jerry's website, a fantastic article. And as he pointed out, the millions of hits. If you really want to understand...
And print that out, I would say. Anybody who visits, print that out.
51 pages.
Hey, Jerry.
51 pages, but it was fantastic preparing for the collapse of the petrodollar system. Jerry, you're back with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
What's going on? Bad Skype connection?
Or are you
I'm
just
assuming.
Cutting us out?
No, it just drops out on me here, so...
All right.
I just wanted to let you know, we got 10 minutes before the break, 59 after we take a break. Do we have enough time to get into the Asian stock markets? What's going on over there, the devaluation of the yuan?
Thumbnail sketch of what's going on.
Sure, you bet. Well, you know, China, the Chinese economy, which is the second largest in the world, is slowing at an unusually quick pace. I mean, right now you have China's manufacturing output contracting. You have industrial production figures that are poor. Car sales domestically in the country are dropping. Export and import levels are weakening. Corruption is increasing thanks to the country's lack of transparency. And here's a very key important thing to realize about China. When you think about China, and this is a staggering fact, I learned this not too long ago and it blew my mind. I had no clue that something shifted in 2008 and 2009. Prior to the crash of 2008, the United States led the global economic expansion. It's pretty much, you know, since 1944. I mean, it was kind of the leading economy. So every time there was a global economic expansion, the United States was pretty much in the driver's seat, driving most of those gains, or responsible for most of those gains. And so therefore, whenever the market would implode, it would be incumbent upon the United States to have policies or to project policies that would not just help the United States, but also help the overall economy recover, because they were in the driver's seat. They created the boom, and so they have to play a role in managing the bust. Well, after 2008 and 2009, things shifted gears, and China, actually from 2008 until now, this boom that we've had for the last 7 years has been 33% attributable to China. So China has driven the overall boom. In contrast, the United States was only responsible for 17% of the global boom, which is really a staggering figure, because this means that China was responsible for twice the amount of the global boom than the U.S. was. And when you kind of think about this in terms of what that means for the bust, that means for the first time in our lifetimes, another country is going to be in the driver's seat and will be looked to manage this downturn. The Fed has limited power this time, because we only contributed half of the global boom. And so therefore, we only are going to have limited potential in preventing the bust, and also managing as it goes down. And what we've seen out of China thus far has been pretty spooky. Their commie colors have certainly come out. They have presented themselves largely as a, you know, capitalistic, or at least leaning towards capitalistic system, but their true colors really came out and emerged. And that's really what spooked these markets, was the fact that when the market began to tank in China several months ago, and on our podcast, by the way, back in November, we had a podcast called Now It's Time to Buy China, and we got into China in November, started buying Chinese stocks. That market went up 100%. By the time we were able to get out, because it was just without warning, the market started crashing, we were able to get out and lock in about 50 to 60% of those gains. So we walked away, you know, we didn't lose money, we walked away, but we lost some of the gains that we had because it moved so quickly. And so we got out of China and we started analyzing it and noticing that their policies are extremely concerning, not just to us, but to many economic observers around the world. They have been extremely interventionary with their monetary policy, as we have as well, but they have been very overt about it. And we're not sure how they're going to handle this. We are on the cusp of what could be a 1929 mess, where you have the Fed who makes a big wrong move. That's exactly what Ben Bernanke did his thesis on, or his dissertation on for his PhD, was the mess up that the Fed had at the 1929 crash, how they should have responded differently, and how they had made a mistake. Well, mistakes happen, especially within man-made institutions. And here you have China, who is, for the first time ever, guiding the global economic downturn. How are they going to do? How are they going to perform? And the U.S. really has no control over Beijing. I mean, they have limited control. But you and I can't do anything about it. The Fed has limited firepower compared to China right now. So their policies will greatly dictate the path that we go down as this bust unfolds. Now, we don't know. Again, they may release some sort of major, massive stimulus that props up these markets and staves this off for a while. But again, it'll just be debt. And if you try to fix a debt problem with more debt, you're going to end up with a bigger problem in the long run. And that's why we have such a major problem today. So
That circles around to what you said, and I really can't drive this home enough. You know, just so I might divert a little bit, people talk about, you know, the sinfulness of any number of immoral issues, but walk over or step over the biggest sin when it comes over the economy, and that being the debt-based monetary system that's built on sand. So having said that, we have to recognize that as a sin in and of itself. And tying this into, you know, the Asian and China market, what you just said there, I mean, it really kind of, what you just said kind of brings it all together, I suppose, from start to finish. I don't know if I made sense there, but I was trying to reach, just understand this whole thing. Really, the entire globe is a house of cards, including but not limited to China and the potential for a 29 reoccurrence.
Yeah, there's a great concern that could happen. You know, there's no doubt about it. And that's always been the thing that we have pointed to, is the fact that the 2008 crisis that we went through was the warm-up. It was the warm-up. I mean, it was, and that's exactly what we stated in our book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation, was we said, this is the warm-up. They're going to stage a massive rally. They're going to pump a bunch of money into the system. They're going to make things even worse. And then the next fall is going to be even worse. No, we don't learn from history. And with the, take for example, our too-big-to-fail problem. You know, we have banks that now are 30 to 40% larger than they were back in 2008. These banks were too big to fail. And, of course, they've always been too big to jail. But here we have, now we're at this area now where banks, these same banks, are 30 to 40% larger. And Washington has done very little to regulate this issue. I mean, even the financial regulations that have been passed have very little teeth. Of course, the banks complain about them because they don't want any kind of regulation. But that's you and I have money in those institutions, so we should want regulation on those banks. They're gambling with our money. You know, right now, the average bank out there can actually take all of your deposited money and go out and gamble with it. There's literally, we have hardly any kind of reserve requirement ratio or reserve ratio requirements. Over in China, they're about 17.5%, 18%. Here, they've been driven down very, very low. So if there were ever a major bank run here in the United States, we would quickly find out that the banks are gambling with your money. And, you know, they don't have a whole lot of money on hand to give to you if you show up with a mob wanting your money back.
Well,
very true. Folks, we're talking with Jerry Robinson. His website is ftmdaily.com. That's ftmdaily.com. His book is Bankruptcy of Our Nation, revised and expanded edition is one we have. Your Financial Survival Guide, 21 Income Streams, Inflation Proof Strategies, and more.
And you know what, Joe? If folks are listening to this broadcast, sure, I don't think I have heard any better series of podcast broadcast for the average person, for the person who's concerned about their portfolio, about their money, about how to handle things, than the five levels of financial freedom. And folks, please take time out from your schedule, download, listen to from FTM Daily, five levels of financial freedom, just fantastic teachable series, Jerry.
Yeah, and anybody who has the Prophecy in the News from this last March, the conference DVD, Jerry did a presentation there. He did a presentation with Paul McGuire and an interview with Paul McGuire himself and us at a roundtable discussion.
Yep.
And the interviews from the DVDs, I think those are all available now.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. And we haven't seen them yet, Jerry. I don't know if you've been able to take a look at that footage yet. I know it was very good when we did it. I just don't know how it turned out from the printing press.
I haven't seen them either.
Have you had a chance to check that? Okay.
I haven't. No, I sure haven't.
I got an email on that Monday, I think it was, or Sunday, from somebody who had ordered the DVD set and said the interviews, specifically yours and there was another one, Paul McGuire, both were just outstanding. They learned a lot from you during the interview and also during your presentation. So Kudos on that. When we come back, Jerry, I'd like to get into, with your permission, and if you want to take us elsewhere, that's fine. But GATT, NAFTA, the TPP, what that is going to do to the United States and our sovereignty and our balance of, you know, whatever.
In hour number three, we're going to be taking calls and questions from the audience. So sit back. We're going to take a quick commercial break now. You're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this.
Send us emails, too. Yeah. Studio at HagmanHagman.com. Sorry about that.
Studio at HagmanHagman.com. Today's Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015, on the Hagman & Hagman Report here on Global Star Radio Network. We'll be right back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.